today, we'll talk about my Disney World trip planning philosophies. That's coming up on this episode 75 of WW Prep to Go. Hello and welcome to WW Prep to Go, where we talk strategy and ideas for people planning their Disney World trips. I am your host, Shannon Albert from WWPrepSchool.com. Thank you so much for being here for episode 75. As always, I want to start at the beginning with a reminder to connect outside of the podcast. And the best way to do that is either to visit the website and sign up for the email list there or on social media. Just look up WW Prep School on your favorite social media platforms and you will probably find me there. I wanted to talk today about my philosophies on planning Disney World trips because I realize when I answer people's questions that there's often a lot of passion behind why I give a certain answer and it may not always be obvious. So I have some philosophies today with some personal stories behind them to sort of support why I feel that way. If I sound a little nasally or congested, it's because I brought a cold home from California when I was at Disneyland last week. And I haven't wanted to tell too many people because I know everyone's going to say, oh, do you have the measles? But it's not. It's just a straight cold. And I have been putting off recording this podcast to the last minute because I have sounded sick and sometimes even my voice has kind of changed and sounded a little raspy. So this is at the last minute just to kind of let my voice and congestion resolve itself. Hopefully I'll be back to complete normal by next week. So I wanted to talk today about some different philosophies. And the first one is actually relevant. Today is my daughter's birthday. She is 20 years old today. And if I tell her happy birthday on the podcast, it would be silly, like parents on Facebook who wish their three-year-old happy birthday, even though their three-year-olds cannot read or use Facebook. My daughter is not a podcast listener, so I'm not going to tell her happy birthday here. But in memory of the fact that today is her 20th birthday, my first thing on my Disney World planning philosophy list, or really these philosophies could be for any trip, but this is a Disney World podcast, so let's just say they're for Disney World trips for now. The first thing on my list is because of her, and it is something that I would like to read from you from Facebook. My most popular Facebook post ever has over 940 likes, and it happened to be about my daughter, and it is the first thing on my list. So let me read that to you, and then I'll just discuss this item after I'm finished. So here is the Facebook post. It says, "Can I get personal for a minute? About 20 years ago, I was a science math tech nerd in the honors program majoring in computer engineering when I found out that I was pregnant with my daughter. Not only was it a challenge to be a single mom at that young age, having just broken up with my boyfriend when I found out, but my daughter is completely different than me and it took some getting used to. Before I knew it, I was immersed in everything pretty and pink and princessy. I later graduated college, started dating my husband, and we got married. He adopted her when she was three. But we were young and didn't have a lot of money to spend. We worked hard to pay off debt and save for our first house, and by the time we could afford to go on a Disney World trip, our daughter was a Disney adult at age 10. Since then, we've done plenty of princess things, like eating breakfast with the princesses, and we even did Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique together once. They used to allow adults. You can laugh at the picture I included with this post. It's ridiculous, but we were making up for lost time. But by this point, the early years when she was little and at her peak of princess obsession were gone. So when people ask me, should I do a princess meal? Should we try more than one? My answer is always yes. Do as much as you can afford to do because they grow up fast. They'll love it. You'll make good memories. And when they're grown, like say 20 years old and a junior in college, you'll be glad you did. Even if you find yourself feeling silly for being dressed in a Belle costume to do it with them." So that is my first item on my list. I am on the older side of raising children. I have a teenager and now a 20-year-old, and the early years are gone where everything was sort of magical to them. And so my first advice is to do as many things for your children's interests at the time as you can, as much as time and money will allow. So if you have a princess-obsessed four-year-old, and you're trying to decide between a couple of events, if you can afford both, do them both. If you have a child obsessed with, you know, any character, I would just do as many things as you can practically do for your trip, because I'm here to tell you that those minutes, those years, they disappear so quickly. And by the time you go back, your child will be in a totally different phase if you get to go back. So I just want to make sure that I sort of drive this home. This is number one: do as many things as you can feasibly do for your trip. And just take advantage of the period of time that your child is in at that point in their life. Number two on my list is to make a plan, but stay flexible. And if you have listened to any of the first timer interviews that I've done, one of the things that gets me the most excited is when people tell me what happened after the trip and they demonstrate this. This is my favorite thing because it really shows that you're in tune with your family and you're not just trying to stick to a plan and be rigid. So this is also why my touring plans are only through lunch, because I like the idea of being able to keep the rest of your day flexible. Because, for instance, after lunch, if you're tired, you could go back to your hotel and take a nap. If you feel like stay in the park, stay in the park. If you are hot and would really like to go swimming at your hotel, go do that. So I really like the idea of having a plan the first part of the day and then leaving the rest of the day more flexible. It's also why the touring plans that I have are grouped by hour and not by minute, because what I hate is for the idea of people racing around and trying to follow a list of rides. So if your touring plan says we need to do this at 9:03 and this at 9:17 and this at 9:41, you feel frantic because you feel like you have to hit your mark. And so what I've been doing is revising all my touring plans to group them by hour. And that way you can sort of get an idea of timing. So you'll know, okay, this will take me about an hour to ride these three rides. But on the other hand, it doesn't stop you from stopping to look at a character that you happen to notice or rewriting something. You know, if you go on a ride and your child really loved it and there's no line, then go on it again. You can probably fit it in as well. So I really, really strongly believe in making a plan, but staying flexible. It's good to have research done ahead of time. I mean, that's why we're all here. We're planning trips. We're learning as much as we can beforehand. But once you get there, you need to stay flexible and kind of try to feel out the situation so that you don't feel rigid and like you're sort of barking orders at everyone. So that is number two. Number three is to remember that the goal is to make memories and have fun and not to do everything. And this is something I try to say as often as possible. And this is not in conflict to number one. My number one was to do as many things as you can for your child's interest. This one is remember not to do everything. So I would just say pick the things that are the most important, which might be, focusing on your child's interests, but don't try to do everything in Disney World because it's too big. And this applies to every destination. It doesn't matter where you're going. You're not going to be able to do everything in one trip. So, this is sort of rooted in, you know, something that's happened in my life as well. So when I was a kid, my mom loved to travel. She still does, but we didn't have a ton of money. So when we did go on trips, my mom tried to fit as many things in as possible. So on a 10-day trip to Florida, we probably did, 10 different things. And it was a lot to pack in. We were up early. We stayed up late. We were tired. And I get why that had to happen, because we just didn't get to go that often. But I think that if your goal is to have fun, then you can sort of pare that list down and eliminate some things from your list so that you're having fun and not overcrowding your day. So just pare it down and remember you're going to have fun. Even if you only do half of what's at Disney World, it's still going to be fun. And you won't necessarily know what you're missing if you're not doing everything else. Number four on my list is to involve children in the planning, even if your trip is a surprise. Now, I feel strongly about this, and this is sort of related to my last one. I wasn't involved in planning anything as a kid, and my kids very much are. And I think this is helpful because it gives kids a sense of what to expect, and it also gives them a chance to make some decisions. You know, you can give them some areas where, you know, you say, hey, we're trying to decide between these three dinners, which one sounds good to you? You know, when they have ownership over it, they feel more invested, and I think they actually remember the trips more when they have had a part in planning them. So I recommend doing that. And this can be lots of different things. So you could watch videos on YouTube. You know, all of my guides to the parks have YouTube videos of every ride. You could watch TV shows about Disney World. The Destination America channel often has the shows about the parks so that you can learn more about it. And there's actually a website that you can go to see what shows are coming up. I will include a link to that in the show notes so you can see what programming to expect in the near future, maybe set your DVRs. So you can do that. You could read books. I often recommend the Burn Bombs Guide for Kids because it has some pictures and some ratings. So, you know, even when we've done surprise trips, we've done sort of this planning, like when I had little kids. And that way they know what to expect and can be a little bit more involved and not feel so out of control as well on their trip. So I think that, you know, I think if you follow these main philosophies, that it'll improve your trips a lot over what some other people are doing on their trips, at least based on my experience. I do have a quick tip of the day from a reader who wants to talk about an alternative to taking taxis on Disney World trips. And here is that tip.
Hi, Shannon. This is Deanna calling from Wisconsin with a tip for your listeners. This tip is about transportation, or rather transportation alternatives in Disney World. My husband and I were there in September and we used an app called Uber for the first time. For those who don't know, Uber is a taxi alternative. And we found it to be really safe, cheap, and convenient while we were there. So for those who don't know how it works, you basically download a free app, you register, and then when you need a ride, you open the app up, pull up the map feature, and then select or type in your destination. And then you'll get the name and picture of your driver, the picture of their car, and estimated time of arrival. And the Uber cars are very much like taxis in that they're everywhere around Disney, so it usually takes them about a minute to get to you wherever you are. The drivers are oftentimes former taxi drivers, and from what they've told us as we've used Uber, they switch over to Uber from taxi companies just because they make a little bit more money. They get a larger share of the profits. So one of the best parts of Uber is actually how you pay, because there's no cash exchanged at all and there's no tipping allowed. So when your ride is over, when you're at your destination, the app calculates your fare and just charges a credit card that you have on file. So you don't tip, you don't give them any money, you literally just get out of the car, say thank you, and goodbye. So I really liked that part of it. We used Uber several times while we were in Disney. We used it going from our hotel to Universal, and we also used it a couple times going from our hotel to different other hotels or dinner places in the evening. So, for example, one night we went from our hotel, which was Boardwalk, to Animal Kingdom Lodge, and found that to be really quick and easy too. So I definitely recommend it. It's worth considering if you're not renting or bringing a car to Disney and you want a little bit cheaper way than a taxi to get around. Thanks for your podcast, Shannon. I listened a lot before my trip, and I still listen now just to kind of try to keep that Disney magic alive. So take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Deanna, for sharing that tip. Lots of people have been asking me to talk about Uber, so I was glad that she called in with that tip. I wanted to add to what she said with a couple of additional tips that I have. First of all, I recommend downloading it to your phone before your trip and setting up your credit card, which is what's used to charge your fare during your trip. Another thing to keep in mind is that I don't believe they are allowed at the airport at all. We saw signs on our last trip that indicated that they were not allowed. So if you don't have a car, you may need to figure out a different alternative. You know, you can use Magical Express, you can use a taxi, a shuttle, whatever the case may be. And another tip is that if you use my code, you can get your first ride free up to $30. So you could actually get one, get between point A and point B one time for free on a Disney trip or any trip. And the code is Shannon A9. That's my name with the letter A and the number 9. I will include that in the show notes, and you can get one trip for up to $30 for free if you use that code. So I hope that some of this information has been a little bit helpful. I think that's going to wrap up this episode of WW Prep to Go. For more information on the show, you can visit www.prepschool.com/episode75. That is the number 75. Until next time, I'll see you on the site.